everybody. It's your old pal, Sarah Silverman. I'm so happy to be here. I haven't actually recorded in a while. I recorded podcasts ahead of time because I knew I was getting my tonsils out. And I want to thank everybody. We got so many calls and well wishes, and I really appreciate it. It was fucking brutal, I'll be honest. You know, it's embarrassing because we're just getting my tonsils out, but they told me it's extremely painful to do it as an adult and as you get older. And boy, they weren't kidding. It was 2 weeks of extreme pain. So feel very bad for me. But like a hero, I made it through. It's so interesting because, you know, it's now just a memory. You know, like it's a little memory in my memory bank. It was 2 weeks of second to second extreme pain. I mean, swallowing anything just felt like I was swallowing broken glass. Your whole body feels like it can't be right, you know, but you have to swallow. It's crazy. But, you know, it could have been, now it's just a memory. It could have been 2 weeks. It could have been 2 days. It could have been 2 seconds. It could have been 2 months. It could have been 2 years. It could have been 2 minutes. No matter what it was, now it's just a little memory. I don't know. I take comfort in that. I think it makes me a little braver knowing that or something. Anyway, because I haven't recorded in a few weeks, I haven't talked about some current events. And then I was like, last night, I was just like, oh, fuck. Like, do I have to talk about Chappelle? I mean, it's been a few weeks now. I easily could not. So I was like, no, I don't have to talk about this. This is not my burden. He's my friend. I don't have to, and you can't make me. But a lot of you called in asking about it, and I was just kind of marinating on it a little, and I thought, well, I'll just jot some thoughts down and see if it's a thing. And then I just wrote a lot down. So fuck it. I mean, I guess I'm going to talk about it, even though I don't want to, but I guess I kind of want to. I don't know. It's just, it's fucking awkward because I, you know, he's my friend and I love him. And then I remembered, you know, awkward is my sweet spot. So I guess here I go. So Dave hosted Saturday Night Live a few weeks ago and, you know, I stayed up to watch it as I am wont to do when he hosts. Because, you know, he hosted the Saturday after the past three elections. So it was, I was curious what he was going to say. And he's a massively influential person with a very powerful voice, and he's funny as fuck. And so I watched it, and it was hilarious and brilliant and winning and charming and wildly anti-Semitic. And the weirdest thing happened afterwards. I immediately fell asleep. It was crazy. Like, I watched it. And I couldn't even, the second his monologue was over and he threw to commercial, I was sleeping. You know, it was like when you break your leg and your body goes into shock to protect you from the pain, I guess, or something. But, you know, the truth is, I've been thinking about this for a while now. And I'm sure that, you know, most people even who watched it, hating Jews was not their takeaway. You know, because they were busy laughing at all the other stuff and the brilliant stuff. But I will tell you that Jews, for the most part, were hypersensitive to it. Just like any minority is going to be more keenly aware of the hatred and little aggressions against them. And there were a bunch of Jewish jokes in there that were fucking hilarious. But that's what made the anti-Semitism in it so scary. It bolstered it. You know, it's like Hannah Einbinder, who is so brilliant, wrote about it soon after. And she pointed out it's two truths and a lie. That bigotry is always couched in a couple true things to bolster a big lie.
Here's some ads.
While I'm reading this ad, I want you to do a simple breathing exercise. Breathe in through your nose. All right, Jen, relax. Hold it for about 5 seconds. Exhale through your mouth. Keep this up while I tell you about today's sponsor, Calm. I got my little Calm app. Oh, it's so good.
I love Calm.
We're partnering with Calm, the number one mental wellness app, to give you the tools that improve the way you feel. Reduce stress and anxiety through guided meditations, improve focus with curated music tracks, and rest and recharge with Calm's imaginative sleep stories for children and adults. There's even new daily movement sessions designed to relax your body and uplift your mind. And you'll start talking like this. If you go to calm.com/Sarah, you'll get a special offer of 40% off a Calm Premium subscription, and new content is added every week. Ooh, I love Calm. When I'm stressed out, when my anxiety's up, I stop everything, I put on a little Calm, and oh my gosh, it just fixes everything. For listeners of this show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm Premium subscription at calm.com/Sarah. Go to calm.com, you don't even need to spell .com, /Sarah for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/Sarah.
And we're back.
And for me, two moments of his monologue made me worry that it would ignite more violence against Jews, which is a crazy and totally rational fear that I have. And the two moments were the part about Kyrie Irving and then the last line. Okay, so Kyrie promoted a conspiracy movie about how the Holocaust never happened and Jews are the devil and there's a Jewish cabal that controls the world. And Chappelle's problem with it was that he was asked to do too many things to make it right. Like the NBA fined him, you know, that the Jewish NBA. And I guess they made him apologize, which he wouldn't do at first, but eventually did. By the way, can we please stop asking people to apologize? It's just, it literally means nothing unless they do it of their own volition. And what else was he asked to do? He was probably asked to go to the like Museum of Tolerance, as Jews are wont to do when things like this happen. And Dave felt that it was unjust.
This is where, you know, I draw the line. I know the Jewish people have been through terrible things all over the world, but you can't blame that on Black Americans. You just can't.
You know, he kind of like Jimmy Stewart stutters at the end to give it a little folksy truth-telling charm, I guess. Kanye said that he wanted to kill the Jews. And Kyrie posted a movie that promotes the ideals that put Jews in actual mortal danger. But fuck, like, the idea of calling out massively influential zillionaire superstars for posting lies and promoting hatred of Jews, all Jews, like we're a monolith, is the Jews blaming their troubles on Black Americans is fucking insane. I can't believe I have to say this. You know, each of them individually have more followers just on Instagram than there are Jews in the world. Jews aren't punching down here by calling out anti-Semitism. Fucking good grief. You know, gaslighting is a word I hate using that I never use because it's so overused, mostly by people who don't know what gaslighting means. But I have never felt more gaslit, gaslighted, gaslit, than Dave accusing Jews for blaming their problems on Black Americans. It's not a thing. I mean, besides the fact that 13% of American Jews are Black, I don't know a single Jew that blames Black Americans for their problems. But I have seen people blame Jews for their problems. Fuck. You know, there's always a way to blame the Jews if one is so inclined, you know, from David Duke to Louis Farrakhan, and they're not even friends, you know, like the Jews brought them to, and Nick Fuentes, you know, Nick Fuentes. Oh my God, look at that. Nick Fuentes is like the new David Duke. Jews replaced him with Nick Fuentes. These people normally would not be friends, but the Jews brought them together. That's some real intersectionality. Ugh, fuck, and this fucking burbling divide between Jews and Black people behooves someone, and it's not either of us. Psst, it's white supremacists. It was very scary. And the other thing Dave said that sent a chill down my spine was the way he ended his monologue, which is he said, well, we should play it.
And I hope they don't take anything away from me. Whoever they are.
And there, right there, Chappelle made himself bulletproof. Because if he faces a single consequence, you know who to blame. Rory had a great tweet, too, afterwards. He said, on the bright side, at least Chappelle's It's All Right to Hate the Jews monologue got him to use the pronoun they. And, you know, Rory said another thing that was really smart in reaction to when Dave said this.
In Hollywood, this was just what I saw. It's a lot of Jews. Like a lot.
And Dave is right. There are a lot of Jews in Hollywood. So what Rory said was, yeah, there are a lot of Jews in Hollywood, but Jews don't run Hollywood. Jews invented Hollywood. You know, and he's right. Jews were forbidden from working in most industries. And so they made one up because Jews hustle. They took nothing and they made something. Jews were kept out of most industries. Like, you know, they were allowed to peddle. They were allowed to sell shiny things. That's why one derogatory word for Jews was like sheeny or sheen, you know, because it meant like trinket or shiny thing, you know, and that's been very generational, you know, and same with show business and same with, you know, banking. That was another thing where they weren't allowed in other industries. They were allowed to be money lenders. But yeah, that's why, you know, listen, that's why, like, when Kanye or Dave buy their chains and their diamonds, they're buying them from Jews. I mean, that's why I had the most boring Finding Your Roots with Henry Louis Gates, even though he said it was the farthest back he was ever able to track a Jewish person. It went, like, all the way back to Catherine the Great. But it was just every relative I had, it was just peddler, peddler, dressmaker, peddler, cobbler, peddler, peddler. It's just so boring. I'm just saying, there's history. There's reasons for these things. You know, there are tropes. Jews are rich. Jews control everything. There are barely any of us. You know, we're 1/5 of 1% of the world. And most of us are in New York and LA. So, you know, Jews are rich. Jews are this. I mean, 1 in 5 Jews in America is in poverty. I'm not saying that like proudly. I just like, it's not represented in art. You don't see it. Now, the other piece for me is that if I stand up and point out anti-Semitism, I immediately get an influx of an extremely racist picture of me in blackface with this you. Yeah, it was me. It was an episode. By the way, not if I stand up for other people's rights, just if I stand up for Jews, I get this you, this you, this you. Yeah, that was me. It was an episode of the Sarah Silverman Program where Alex DeZaire and I are fighting over who has it worse, black people or Jews, which, to be honest, still resonates. I know today there is absolutely no context that makes blackface okay, and that is the only reason that I don't do it now. Kidding. It was racist by design, because it was an episode about racism and I played the racist. Was it an ignorant attempt through the lens of now? Yes, fucking yes, of course. I heard a few people say, you know, Sarah Silverman wore blackface and all she had to do was apologize and Kyrie had to pay money and Kanye lost all his endorsements. As if it's a double standard. And it certainly sounds like a double standard, but there has to be some difference between comedy about racism and saying you want to kill all Jews in a Twitter rage. Or posting a fake documentary about how the Holocaust didn't happen and Jews are the devil. That cannot be too nuanced for us, right? I mean, I don't mean to bring myself into it, and believe me, I don't want to. I wasn't going to, but I do think that I worry that talking about the whole blackface thing and defending it is coming from ego for me. And I don't defend it, but it, I have to bring it into this conversation because I also, because I have a piece in it, you know? And I decided, yeah, it is relevant because I take and I have taken the consequences like a woman. And though I would love to make that picture go away, I can't. All I can do is make it right every day, whenever and wherever I can for the rest of my life. And I consider it a privilege to do that. Anyway, you will never get to see that episode of the Sarah Silverman Program, even if you were curious, because the Jews took it down from every streamer. I just wanted to blame the Jews. So no one will ever see it unless you have a DVD of it, or even less likely, a DVD player. And that's fine. And it's something I just have to suck up and take. It's, you know, part of comedy. It's just frustrating because all that remains is just this insanely racist picture of me in blackface. This you? Yes! Yes! But fuck, it's not like I wore it to like a Halloween party in the 80s or something. It was on television, which is a bigger thing to discuss, which I spent an episode talking about on my old show, I Love You America, on Hulu. Check that out. It's episode 113. I don't know. And if, you know, if you're interested and you're watching this on YouTube, I'll post the other side of that horrible picture, which is Alex Desaire in a giant fake nose and payas and a yarmulke and an I Heart Money t-shirt, which I put him in, by the way, just to be clear, like the buck on all of this ends with me, stops with me. The buck stops. By the way, Alex Desaire, who's an amazing actor and a fucking incredible ska musician, was also in my video, The Great Schlep, which it was for the 2008 election, and it pushed young Jews to go to Florida and make their grandparents vote for Obama, which they did. Anyway, please believe me when I say that I, too, am so fucking tired of everyone getting mad at every single thing, especially in comedy. And I love my friend Dave. It's just sometimes there are consequences for your complete and total freedom of speech. And you gotta suck it up and take it, like I do. Maybe even take it in. And Dave, I know you have gotten a lot of shit, but you just can't blame that on Jewish Americans. You just can't. I mean, you can. You totally can. You did on Saturday Night Live. But could you not, you know, just for your Jewish friends, your Jewish friends that, you know, show up for you on a dime? I mean, for a dime. Hey-o! And I've, you know, sometimes I wake up and I'm like, you know what? Good. I think that what I got from Dave's monologue now is all right. Anything goes. We're back, baby. We're back to anything goes. And if anyone has a problem with it, with our art, with our truth-telling, you can blame the Jews. Oh, look at that. Little twist at the end. But, you know, there is a caveat to anything goes. There's one caveat. In comedy, there is one rule to anything goes. And that rule is, and it's the one rule of roasts, is that you must love the person you're roasting, or it does not work. And roasts are brutal. Roast jokes, I mean, the more racist, misogynistic, anti-Semitic, homophobic, the better. But they only work if who you are roasting is somebody that you love to pieces. And it has to transcend through. I would look at any of Colin Quinn's specials to see what that looks like. He's a perfect example. Eddie Murphy as Saul, the old Jewish man in the barbershop and Coming to America. Every Jew fucking loves that because it feels like love. It feels like being known. There's no hatred in it. That's why it works. Like, remember that one roast, was it the roast of Justin Bieber or something? And Ann Coulter was there. And it didn't work. It wasn't funny. It was so cringy. Why? Because the people roasting her hated her. And it doesn't work.
Sarah, it was Rob Lowe's roast.
Oh, okay. It was Rob Lowe's roast. But yeah, it was Rob Lowe's roast. Ann Coulter did it. I'm not saying don't include, you know, people on the right or this or that, but they have to love each other. And that was just ugly. It was just, it felt mean. And you don't want to feel bad for Ann Coulter, but I did. You know, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work comedically. Because you're not supposed to roast people you don't like. You're not even supposed to roast people you don't love. And that is the only anything goes rule, in my opinion. I mean, sidebar, you know, this insanely sensitive time will pass when and if we truly live in a post-hate society, where the structure of our society and the bedrock of our system is not founded in racism, where truly every citizen is seen and treated equally. Will we achieve it? I don't know. It's not looking good. But I think you can go as hard as you want if you do it with love. And I know it sounds corny, but that's how it works.
Here's some ads.
Lomi. Lomi by Pila. They sent me one of these, and I cannot wait to set it up. And I haven't set it up yet, I'm going to be honest. But it is freaking awesome. What you do is you take all your, it's a composter. It looks like something from a fucking Apple store. It's so sleek and beautiful and small. But you throw your shit, like your coffee grinds, your banana peels, any kind of like food and stuff like that. You press a button, and a few hours later, it fucking becomes, it turns it into soil, and then you throw it on your plants, baby. It's amazing. Lomi is a countertop electric composter that turns scraps to dirt in under 4 hours. There's no smell when it runs, and it's really quiet. Set it before bed, you wake up in the morning, and you've got fucking soil. Thanks to Lomi, I'm going to have like way less garbage each week. You know, it makes 3 bags into 1 bag. I'll throw out way less garbage. That means it's not going into landfills. It's not producing methane. Instead, I turn my waste into nutrient-rich dirt that I can feed to my plants. I love that so much. If you want to start making a positive environmental impact or just make cleanup after dinner that much easier, Lomi is perfect for you. Head to lomi.com/Sarah and use the promo code Sarah to get $50 off your Lomi. That's $50 off when you head to lomi.com/Sarah and use promo code Sarah at checkout. Food waste is gross. Lomi is your solution. With the holidays just around the corner, Lomi will make the perfect gift for someone on your shopping list. At the Sarah Silverman Podcast, we believe home should be where you and your family feel safest, especially over the holidays. This season, give yourself and your family the gift of peace and protection with the number one rated home security system, SimpliSafe. And right now, SimpliSafe is offering the Sarah Silverman Podcast listeners 40% off a new security system. Wow. But don't put this off. Here's why I love it. I've given SimpliSafe to friends. My really good friend, Brett, bought the whole system for his new house. He loves it. I just love what they do, and they back it up. You know, SimpliSafe was named the best home security system of 2022 by U.S. News & World Report, a third year in a row. In an emergency, 24/7 professional monitoring agents use Fast Protect technology exclusively from SimpliSafe to capture critical evidence and verify the threat is real so you can get priority police response. Don't miss your chance for a massive savings on my favorite security system. Get 40% off any new system at simplisafe.com/Silverman today. That's simplisafe.com/Silverman. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
And we're back.
You left me a message. Now I'm playing it for the world. Let's hear some voicemails.
I don't know why I came here. Other than Sarah really makes me laugh and feel a little bit better about humanity. I was born and raised in Colorado Springs. I was forced to attend evangelical Christian churches all the way until I was 18, and I learned how to hate myself from the inside out.
Oof.
And I learned how to hide who I really was genetically. And I remember the day that Columbine happened, and I was rushed inside from the playground so that they could put our school on lockdown. And I remember talking to a youth pastor in middle school about my sexuality, and like, total side note, he inadvertently came out of the closet when I was forced to go talk to him about it. When I came out, I went to Club Q the following night to celebrate, and I think I just wanted a place to go right now to say that I'm heartbroken and I don't know how to feel.
I know that feeling, not knowing how to feel. Oh, sweetie. Oh, sweetheart. Wow, I hate myself from the inside out. Thank you for calling. You know, I bet a ton of people listening right now found a new way to put words to their experience because of you. And probably feel a lot less alone. So that's a mitzvah, just calling in, just saying that. But I'm so sorry. And fucking Lauren Boebert, whatever, she fuels this homophobic hatred, totally insane lies and grooming and all this shit about the gay community. Then has the fucking tits, the nuts to go online and say thoughts and prayers. Fuck you. Extremely not Jesus-like, this woman. You know, the buck is supposed to stop with our elected officials, but fuck that, you know. They never, ever, ever take accountability. They never look inward. They never reflect. They're never vulnerable, and all they care about is re-election and saying anything they need to do, fueling rage, finding a marginalized people to blame. She's a pig. And you are so smart and so aware, and you are stronger than you know. And I'm glad you called in. I know you did it because you felt helpless, but I bet you helped a lot of other helpless people know that they're not alone. Aw. All right, what else?
Sarah. Oh, woman. See what I did there? I don't know if you need to take every other week off or something, but these two podcasts after your tonsillitisectomy.
I pre-recorded those.
Two of the best podcasts, Chef's Kiss, to date, as an avid viewer, listener of your podcast from day one. I am full from the delicious content you provided in these last two.
Holy shit, keep I'm so glad.
I don't know. Self-care looks good on you. Okay? Anyways, I digress. My question is, I am currently a teacher in grad school. I'm in a relationship. Life is busy, okay? On the days that I go into my teaching job, some of my coworkers seem to have taken it personally that I am busy. When I see them, instead of the good, jovial relationship we used to have, they kind of give me like sour looks and complain, oh, you're so busy now. Our relationship is so different. Of course it is. I have a lot on my plate, and I would think that a friend would understand that. So now I'm torn. And I've said something before. I've said, you know, when you make a sad face, it kind of adds more stress to my plate, and the plate is full. What do I do? Do I cut it off? Do I say, hey, let's talk in 2 years? I need your help. I love you.
A friend would understand that. Yeah. I mean, I go into work cocoons for months at a time, and my close friends and my family gets it. They get it. But that second and third outer layer of friends do not get it. And it's just so funny because they're always the squeaky wheels about, like, I'm always the one to reach out to you and you never reach out to me, or, you know, I haven't heard from you in so long. And it's just like, oh my God, if I had free time, you aren't even in the top 20 people I would reach out to hang out. It's always like that outer tier. It's very funny to me that, you know, the friends that demand time and complain that I'm not tending the garden of our friendship are never my closest friends. Besides the fact that I'm basically a shut-in and rarely make plans. I mean, the greatest thing that happens is people canceling plans on me. It's like a snow day. For your closest friends, I would say schedule it. Schedule time with them, you know, even if it's a FaceTime date. Like, my best friend from high school who lives in New York will, like, schedule FaceTime dates, you know? Slip it in, schedule it in, and then you'll know that you've made time, you know? You gotta schedule all that shit when you're busy. You have to schedule fucking sometimes. You have to schedule doing nothing sometimes. But, you know, that, like, getting mad at you at work for because you're not, like, you know, as available as you used to be, that's ego shit on their part, you know? I'm sorry some of your work friends are basically bullying you for being busy. You can carve out time with them if you want to. I guess what I'm saying is, like, compartmentalize. I'm actually very good at compartmentalizing. But if you want, that's a way. You can just kind of slot people in. You know, anyone who's testing my friendship is setting me up for failure. Make time for the things and the people that you want to, that you want to fit in, that nourish you in some way. And don't take on guilt from that outer ring of friends that is putting it on you. It's ridiculous. Friends don't make you feel guilty for missing, like, fucking trivia night at McSorley's.
Here's some ads.
Ooh, definite articles. Definite Articles is creating the next generation of sustainable performance wear, and just in time for holiday gifting. I love this company. I have their workout gear, and, you know, just because it's something that it comes from recycled materials, you go like, well, it's good to buy it, but is it going to be the best? I love it. It, like, sucks you in. It feels like compression, you know, and I've been working out in it or putting it on to work out and not working out in it all day lately. Did you guys know that the polyester and nylon in our performance gear is a form of plastic? And that plastic sticks around for centuries, polluting our oceans and food supply. So you can change the game. Definite Articles, they design the planet's first performance wear that biodegrades naturally when it's discarded, turning plastic into soil. Oh yeah, they sent me a bunch of stuff, and I love the workout pants. I have the hoodie in two sizes, and I love it, and I use them both because sometimes I want a smaller size, like, under something else, and sometimes I want it over a sweater. I love it, and it feels good, and it is good. Like, it's so cool when something, you know, made that will help the earth is actually, like, one of the better products, and this is one. So go to definitearticles.com and use the promo code Sarah for 20% off. You know, if you want to avoid boring, basic, and bland gifts this year, Uncommon Goods is your secret weapon. Uncommon Goods is here to make your holiday shopping stress-free by scouring the globe for the most remarkable and truly unique gifts for everyone on your list. Whether you're shopping for your secret Santa or your entire family, Uncommon Goods knows exactly what they want. You know, I went on that link, and it's just so eclectic. It's just one place you can go to buy a shit ton of gifts that aren't all the same gift. And it's there just to kind of, they curate a bunch of gifts that you can just go and shop in one place, even though it's kind of so many different kinds of things. You know, they've got, like, a minute mimosa sugar cube trio. Like, you drop one of these cubes into a glass of bubbly and just watch it turn into a mimosa or a Bellini cocktail. It's just a fun gift. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. From art and jewelry to kitchen, home, and bar, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Not the same lackluster gifts you could just find anywhere. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit nonprofit partner of your choice. It doesn't sound like much, but they've donated more than $2.5 million so far. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/Sarah. That's uncommongoods.com/Sarah for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
And we're back.
Hi, Sarah. I wanted to get your opinion on what you think an individual's responsibility is in stopping misinformation. For context, I've watched the story unfold recently where politicians and people on the internet have been stating that school children are identifying as animals and that they are putting kitty litters in bathrooms. To me, this is so clearly an attack on trans and non-binary peoples,
yes,
where they are creating this false story that has been repeatedly debunked, but then it conflates the real issues, which is about gender identity and trans people being able to use the bathrooms that they're most comfortable in. And I've really tended to take the approach that is similar to the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episode, where you know there were all these mascots and monsters who were destroying the city. And Lisa says that the solution is to just don't look. That if you don't look, you know, they will go away. But the problem with that is that it only works if everybody doesn't look. And more I've been seeing Facebook posts on this, you know, talking about the kitty litter and just trying to other trans and non-binary people. And so my question is do I try to have a conversation with them about this? Do I post something about it myself? You know, does this just create a pile-on effect or feed the algorithms where we're all going to be showing more and more of this and create more misinformation? How do we have a conversation about these things in a way that works?
Oh, there he goes. Great call. Great question. Maybe not the best answer. The kitty litter thing is just, I mean, it's just, it's the same thing as when gay marriage was on the table and the right was like, oh, then it's going to, people are going to want to marry their dog. No, they won't. And by the way, even if they did, and this is Todd Glass, I heard say this. Yeah, let people marry their dogs. If that's what it takes to give humans human rights, you have to risk that they might then marry a dog. It's the whole thing is absurd, and it's always the right. They don't want, this is not earnest. This is not innocent. This isn't them genuinely wanting to know information, because if they did, they would ask trans people. They would ask trans kids. They would talk to people who are trans to get information. They don't want to do that. That doesn't give them the answer that they want and need. They have to make up these absurd, totally fringe possibilities, you know, like a straight guy is going to dress up like a girl so we can go into the ladies' room and watch women shit. No, that's not going to happen. I mean, there's no reason to not give people rights because of crazy fringe possibilities. These politicians and people on the right that are talking about kids becoming a dog and having, or a cat and being, having kitty litter because of this trans issue, is just making up a hysteria that they can maximize for their own gain. It doesn't, it's not caring about children. It's not caring about people. Yeah, I think, yes, you should call this stuff out, misinformation out. Yeah, you should do anything you can. Call it out as a lie, make noise. But this is such a Hitler move, you know, repeating an absurd lie over and over and over until it just becomes true because it's just in our minds, you know, it just lives there like a song you can't get out of your head, but evil. You know, boy, the right does this brilliantly too. And it's so fucking evil. Like I think they believe that they, you know, like the evangelical right, you go like, God, they're so not Jesus-like, you know, but they really believe they can say anything and lie because it's for good in their eyes. It keeps Republicans in power, so the ends justify the means in their mind. And it's just fucking scary and dangerous, and there's got to be a way to stop it, but I don't know what it is, because, boy, social media is such a friend of misinformation. It travels so much faster than truth, and even if it's corrected, it's still traveling. It's still being retweeted or reposted. It's scary, and it's dangerous, and they're there's got to be a way to stop it, but I don't know what it is. You know what? I'll tell you what. When it, this is when it will happen that we'll be able to stop misinformation. When squashing lies and misinformation makes rich people money. That's when it will stop. Because right now, rage gets clicks. And clicks equals money. And misinformation and lies are created to engage through rage. If truth somehow made the rich richer, there would be truth. We'd prioritize truth. Maybe someone will figure it out. The Gen Zers of TikTok will hopefully save us all, but I don't know, maybe don't hold your breath. Fuck, I'm being negative. I just think maybe no one's coming to save us. So I guess, yeah, do all you can, and I will too. And we'll meet back here. What else?
Hey, Sarah. It's Simon from San Antonio, Texas.
Hi.
And I'm not feeling too great, like a lot of people down here. Ugh. Sure, you heard the news about Abbott winning, and it's just so disheartening. You know, I don't know. How am I supposed to have hope during all of this, you know? I mean, the fact that Uvalde.
I know.
Basically handed over their votes to Abbott on a silver platter.
Won
a red platter, I guess.
By a landslide.
Of
there.
All the... Are you fucking kidding me? How am I supposed to have hope during these times? Because you always seem so hopeful and you talk about spreading love and everything, but it's like... I mean, I'm not giving up on voting. I'm still going to vote. I know it's a slow process, but that's just the thing. It's a slow process, and I feel like we are running out of time. Fascism is at the door. Global warming is kicking our ass. And it's not easy for all of us to just move like they tell us. I don't know. I just, what the fuck are we supposed to do down here, man? That power grid is going to go out and we're going to fucking die. I don't know. Yeah. At least your podcast makes me laugh, right? Love you.
Love you. I know, I couldn't fucking believe it. I couldn't believe Abbott won by like a landslide in Uvalde. But he did. He did. He won. And I get your frustration, and I say all the same things as you. I just have my shit a little more together for the hour I record this podcast. But, you know, if you pull back and you look at the bigger picture, you know, by all accounts, this midterm was supposed to be a landslide, a red wave. And it really, really wasn't. And that's great, you know? And Democrats picked up most of the elections where Trump-endorsed lunatics were running, which is why the right has abandoned him completely, other than Boebert, because she eked out a win, and Lindsey Graham and... with Ted Cruz, who both clearly there's shit on them from Russia. there's no doubt in my mind that Trump/Russia has shit on both of them because they outwardly hated Trump's fucking guts. And then right around the time of the DNC hack, which people don't remember, was also an RNC hack. They didn't use the stuff. The whole point was to get Hillary, you know, to fuck up Hillary. And nothing really came out from the RNC hack yet. But there's definitely stuff in there. That's my theory. I don't know. You know, we know Russia used Trump to weaken the U.S.'s standing in the world. And boy, did that work. Better than they could have imagined. That's how Putin works. You know, he's like the... that cult in The Vow or Scientology or his protege Trump, you know, he gets information on people's darkest secrets and then he hangs that over their heads and gets them to do whatever he wants. He blackmails them. Then if they still don't bend to his will or if they don't have any dark secrets, they commit suicide or fall out a window or eat poison. Ugh. I don't know. Listen, let's boil it down to this. When life's got you down, either get off the internet and connect with nature, which puts it all in a perspective beyond ourselves, or do something about it. Phone bank, register voters, work for a candidate that you really believe in, help others somehow, get out of your own head, out of your own self. Nothing changes people for good more than human contact. It's a salve. You know, Eckhart Tolle has a quote that's a really good guide. If you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, leave. If you can't leave, accept it. It's a good guideline. What else?
Hello to my friend Sarah. I'm leaving this message as a reply to a caller whose name was Gage from, I believe, Illinois, Chicago? I don't know. Either way, here's my reply to him. He called in about a female friend who called him or texted him out of the blue saying, like, hey, can I come hook up with a stranger at your place?
Oh, yeah.
Here is my two cents. Now, Gage did not say his sexuality in the call. Based on his voice, I'm like, Gage, I think you're gay. I'm gay. I could be wrong. Gage, let us know. If I'm wrong, educate me, bruh. But here is my experience with that. Female friends have, for a while, seen queer people as not whole people, where it's like, oh, you're just my gay friend. You're my gay best friend. Like you don't have a life. You're my gay best friend. So right. This is my experience. I was living with a roommate who did not see me as an actual person. We were living together. So she would just have people over. It's like I was just in the background of her life. And I'm like, you know, I'm a whole person. You can't, like, I'm not just reduced to your gay best friend. Hope this helps, Gage. Bye.
Very astute. Yeah, I hear that. It's interesting. I have a good friend named Kulap, who one day, many, many years ago, said, I'm fucking sick of being the friend in someone else's story. And she became just massively proactive in making that happen. I've really, to see someone say, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm doing this, and then do it. She now is a writer, a filmmaker, a producer, an actor, a showrunner. She's fucking killing it. And I watched the whole thing happen, and I'm just in awe. Because, you know, I saw her moment of change. I watched her really do it, all of it. She lives life so full, and she's so busy, but boy, she schedules in her fun. Every aspect of her happiness is entirely due to her own self and the care she decided to take of that self. And I'm just in awe. It's so inspiring to see. And you can do that. But I love that you're even just aware of it. You know, you don't want to be the friend in the, you know, Kate Hudson, Matthew McConaughey, meet cute rom-com. You want to be your whole entire person. You want to be the star of the movie of your life. All right, Dad. Well, we are winding down. Not rounding down. Why do I go to that? Rounding down. And by the way, as a Jew, I feel it's important that when I tip, I always round up. I never round down. All right, this is when I say, Dad, goodbye. And no, Dad, this is when I say subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And check us out on YouTube if you want to watch.